We're holding on page Nun Ches in Bava Basra, the second line from the bottom, middle of Oiskafaf Ches. We're in the middle of the story of Eiv. So we started with that Hashem says to the Satan, the Satan says, I've been wandering around the earth and I can't find anybody of the caliber of Avraham Avinu. He never complained, even when he had to buy a plot of land in Eretz Yisrael to bury Sarah, even though Hashem had promised him the whole Eretz Yisrael. So Hashem says, have you considered Eiv, how good he is? And the Satan says, you know what? Yeah, of course, he's a Yorei Elokim. He has everything good. So therefore, he's afraid to rock the boat. So therefore, he's continuing to be ultra frum so that he'll continue to enjoy goodness from you. But now you see, even he's enjoying Me'enor Lamabba, as we learned yesterday. So you try harming his possessions, and you'll see what he really is. So Hashem tells him, go ahead, you can start harming his possessions. So we started learning yesterday the Pesukim, where one day his sons and daughters were eating and drinking in their eldest brother's house, and a messenger comes and says that while the cattle were plowing and the donkeys were grazing nearby, which we learned yesterday means he was enjoying the grass was growing right away as soon as they plowed, then people from Shiva came and stole all of them and killed the attendants. So the pasuk continues, Oid Zemedaber, while that messenger was speaking, the Zebava Yomer, another messenger came and said, Eshel Kim Begomer, a fire from Hashem came down on the sheep and the shepherds and burned them. Oid Zemedaber, then while that one was still speaking, the Zebava Yomer, another messenger comes and says, Kastim Samu Shloisha Roshim, the Kastim deployed themselves in three divisions. Some of the Foshim explain that Roshim means the heads of the units. Others, so Samu Shloisha Roshim would mean that they appointed three commanders. The other explanation is Roshim means the units themselves, so it means they deployed in three units. Anyway, by Yishtu al Gamalim, they scattered themselves to fight against all the camels. By Yikachim Gomer, and they took all the camels and killed all the people who were taking care of the camels. So far, Eiv has lost all his livestock. Oid Zemedaber, while this one is still speaking, the actual pasuk says Ab Zemedaber. The Malbim actually points out a little nuance over there. Oid Zemedaber means while each one was still speaking and giving one thing of bad news, and the next one shows up in between and has his own bad news to tell. Ab Zemedaber means only after the last one finished speaking. So like now, Eiv might have thought, okay, I've lost all my possessions, I've lost all my livestock, and all the servants who were taking care of them and all. At least my family is safe. He can finally, for a moment, breathe in relief, and then Ab Zemedaber, and then unexpectedly yet another one comes and tells him that his children have been killed. So that was meant to make the Nisoyan much greater, of course. So Oid or Ad Zemedaber, while this one was still speaking, the Zeb Baba Yomer, another messenger came and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in the house of their eldest brother, and all of a sudden a tremendous windstorm came from the direction of the desert. It touched the four corners of the house. It was basically like a big hurricane or tornado, and it fell on the young man, and they were killed. There are, by the way, Mephoshim who explain, since at the end of Sefer Eiv, you have that it says Hashem restored all of Eiv's fortunes, and it says he had sons and daughters again. He had the pasuk says Shiv Ona Bonim, which there are different explanations among Mephoshim, whether it means seven or 14, does Shiv Ona is basically the same word as Shiva, or does it mean twice Shiva and three daughters? Now, to begin with, he had seven sons and three daughters. So on the face of it, it means that his earlier children, his 10 children were killed, and now he had new ones. There are Mephoshim who explain, I mean, after all, you know, it's one thing you can say with camels and donkeys and whatnot, that they're replaceable. One is the same as another. You can't really say that with children. So there are Mephoshim who explain that actually the children weren't killed, rather the Sutton made it look like they were killed, but he actually spirited them away, and they were in hiding, basically, under the control of the Sutton until the story is over, and then they get released from captivity and restored to Eiv. But as far as Eiv knows, they're dead. So Vayokam Eiv, so Eiv got up, Vayikras Me'iloi, and he tore his robe. From this we learn, by the way, that Kriya has to be done standing. Vayogos Asroshe V'goymer, and he pulled out hair on his head. V'goymer V'yomer, and he says, Orem Yatzalim. If we learned before the machlokas of whether Eiv was a goy or a Jew. If he was a goy, then there's no issur on him to pull out hair because of Mesim. If he was a Jew, then he would have to say that he's tearing out his hair over his possessions, which is not also. Anyway, by Yomer, and he says, Orem Yatzasim Yvetin Imi, I came out from my mother's womb naked, Orem Oshav Shama, and when I return there, meaning when I'm after 120, when he dies, then I'm going to be returning there naked as well. In other words, I came into the world without possessions. Now I'm also bereft of possessions. So it is. Hashem Nosan, Hashem gave, Hashem Lokach, and Hashem took, Yehi Shem Hashem Mevorach, may Hashem's name be blessed. So he's so he's not complaining at all. In all of this, with all of these disasters, Eev did not sin. He didn't ascribe any injustice to Hashem. He didn't say that Hashem is being unfair to him. Okay. Pasuk continues by Hi Hayoim. Then the day came, another Rosh Hashanah, by Avoyu Bnei HaLakim LeYisiyatze B'Gomer, and the Bnei HaLakim, the Malachim, came to stand in front of Hashem, and the Satan came as well. Ben Yehoyada, by the way, brings an interesting point in this connection. He brings from the Arizal that when we have in the Shira Sayam, we have in the Shira Sayam the expression in the pasuk Yumin Hashem Tir Abs Oyev. Now the Gemara is going to explain soon that the letters Oyev and Eoyev are the same letters, and in fact that Eoyev himself claimed that maybe Hashem mistakenly thinks of him as an enemy. So the Ben Yehoyada brings from the Arizal that actually there is a certain truth to that, in that the name Eoyev and the name, since the letters are in fact the same, it represents that at that time of Kriyas Yamsuf, it was determined that Eev is going to undergo all this suffering. So in that case, but if we're saying that it was on Rosh Hashanah, so what happens? So Ben Yehoyada says that's exactly that. Hashem tells the Satan, you're going to be able to do whatever you want to Eev, but we're waiting until an appropriate time for that to begin, and that will be on Chof Aleph Nissen, on Shavish HaPesach. So the Malachim came to stand in attendance on Hashem, and the Satan comes as well. And Hashem again says to the Satan, where are you coming from? And he answers the same thing as before. He says the same thing from circulating around in the world, and walking around in it. So what does that mean? The Satan says the same thing as before. I've circulated around in the entire world. I could not find anybody of the caliber of your servant Avraham. You told him, go walk around, using the same word, hishalach, in the land of Eretz Yisrael, the length and width of it, because I'll give it to you. And yet when he wanted to bury Sarah, he couldn't find a place to bury her, and he had to pay a lot of money, and he didn't question your judgments. So the point is, this is the same thing as we had before. So why is the Gemara repeating that whole thing? The point is, in other words, that even after all of that, even after all the disasters that befell Eev, nevertheless, Sutton can still say that he didn't find anybody of the caliber of Avraham.
Okay.
So
thank you.
So even after all of that, he still considers Avraham to be that Avraham. There's nobody comparable to Avraham. In fact, Maharsha says you find some nuances of difference in the pasuk that before the first time it says Vayavar Hasatan Vayavar Hasatan Besarcham. Here it says Vayavar Gam Hasatan Beis Yaksev. In the beginning of Perek Beis, it actually says that the Satan also came to stand in front of Hashem. Now, why does it have to mention that? If it says that all of them are coming to stand, why does it have to mention specifically that he's coming to stand? It means basically, Maharsha says he's really into this. He really wants to see this whole thing through. And therefore, he's going to be misyatsev. He's going to stand firmly and saying, I'm still standing on the same point that I made before. So Hashem says to the Satan, Asanta libcha el or al abdi Eev, the actual Lashon HaPasuk is el, have you paid attention to my servant Eev, that there's nobody like him in the world? And Hashem says, and even after all of this, Hashem continues in the Pasuk, v'ayidenu machzik v'tumase, he's still holding on to his tmimus, and Hashem says, v'tisiseni voy levaloi chinam, you have incited me, you to say me like Meloshin Mesis, like you've convinced me, you persuaded me to swallow him up, to destroy him for no good reason. In other words, in the simple pshat, Hashem is telling the Satan, look at this, you claim that Eev is a no good nick, and he's only being a Yoresh Shemayim because he's rich and successful, and therefore, he wants to keep his riches and his success, and therefore, he knows the only way to do that is to be a Yoresh Shemayim, but now you see he lost everything, And still he's being the same Yoreh Shamayim. So you accused him and you made me and you caused me to destroy him and to damage him for no reason. So Amar Rav Yechon or Molly Mikra Kasuv, if the Pasuk had not been written using that phrasing, it would be impossible to say such a thing. How could you speak of persuading Hashem? Hashem is, so to speak, speaking of himself in human terms, as though you could convince him of something, you could persuade him of something, and he's willing to, and he's able to be persuaded. So, of course, it's not like that.
Is that a limitation on Hashem to say that he can't be persuaded?
No, the point is, in other words, the same way as we talk about that Hashem has a power of gvul, because if Hashem only, we talk about the famous vote from Rameyu in Ibn Gabai, that if Hashem only had the power of bilti gvul, then that would be a limitation on Hashem himself, right? But still, we don't talk, it seems disrespectful to be referring to Hashem as being persuaded like a human being would.
It's a disrespectful question.
It's right. No, it's not a disrespectful question, but Rabbi Yochanan is saying that if the Pasuk hadn't phrased it that way, it would be disrespectful for us to say that way. But again, we learned before that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Sefer Iyot, so therefore.
Yeah, but similar thing with Asakhan and Avraham Avinu and Akeda, isn't Rashi talking?
Yeah, but there it's not Hashem, there it's not him persuading, there it's him accusing. Fine, the Satan, of course, can accuse a person. That happened after the Gemara is going to explain now. That's part of his job, is to accuse. But to talk about Hasasa, which suggests, especially actually, you know, there's a Gemara in Chulin that says, Ein Hasasa, that Hasasa primarily persuading somebody means with food and drink. The Gemara brings a pasuk over there, for example, where it says about Achav persuaded Yehoshaphat to go with him to battle by making a banquet in his honor. What are we going to say? The Sultan made a banquet for Hashem, so that doesn't really work. But the Rechon says that this is how the pasuk works. Right, so yeah. But Yehoyada makes a point on it, actually, why does the pasuk phrase it that way? And basically he explains, Hashem Taka wanted Iyo to go through a set of Yisurim. We talked about yesterday, or 2 days ago, what Ben Yehoyada brings Barichos, an idea that Iyo was actually a Gilgal of Terach. So therefore, there was quite a bit from his past of Gilgal of Terach, of Abraham's father. Yeah, so there's quite a bit in his past that needs to be cleaned up. But on the other hand, Hashem himself doesn't want to go and openly say, I'm going to bring Yisurim on the guy. Therefore, like, he has to manipulate things to get the Satan into a position where he's going to go and so to speak, persuade. Like, in other words, he's going to be saying only what Hashem wanted to do anyway, but doesn't want to say it out himself. Yeah. The Masnisatana. In a Braisa, which, by the way, Avas Esan on the side over here refers to a relevant Gemara in Chagiga that actually says almost the other way around, that the Gemara says over there, when Rabbi Yochanan would learn this pasuk, he would cry. That imagine you have an Eved whose master can be persuaded to be against him. What hope does that Eved have of getting out of it? So it almost seems like we are talking about Hashem being able to be persuaded against the person. So one thing is we know famously it says that Iyo was one of Pare's advisors in that case, and he deserves the Yisurim for being quiet over there. On the other hand, Avos Esan points out earlier in our sugya we learned that Rabbi Yochanan had said Iyo didn't live in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim at all. He learned that he lived in the time of Golus Babel, and he came from Golus Babel. Well, then in that case, then it really is for nothing on the face of it, because what did he do wrong that he should deserve such serious suffering? The Masnisatana, in a Braisa, we learn more about this, that we're saying that the Satan can, so to speak, persuade Hashem. Yored umasis, umasa, the Satan, which the Gemara is going to explain soon, he's also the Yetzirah, he's also the Malach HaMavet, so he comes down to a person, umasis, and convinces umasa, and tricks the person into doing Aveda. Oyla, then he goes up to Shemayim, umastin umargiz, and he goes and accuses and makes Hashem angry at the person. Notol Rishus, then he gets permission from Hashem, then Notol Neshama, and he takes the person's Neshama in punishment. So in other words, he wears many hats. He's the Satan. He's the Yetzer Hara who convinces a person to do bad. He's also the accuser in Shemayim, and he's also the one who carries out the punishment, the Malach HaMavet, as the Gemara is going to say soon. So, and then we see that this is all related to this idea of Akisiseni Boy, that therefore it's a part of the Sutton's job, therefore, in his role as Sutton, is to accuse a person before Hashem, and so to speak, convince Hashem to do such and such, to give permission for the person to be harmed. So the Gemara continues, quoting the Pesukim, Vayanash Satan as Hashem Vayemah. So the Satan replies to Hashem and says, so you're telling me, so Hashem had just told the Satan, look, you convinced me to harm Eod for no good reason, because you see, after all, that your idea was wrong. He's still faithful to Hashem, and even though he went through all this so far. But Vayanash Satan as Hashem Vayemah, the Satan replies to Hashem and says, Urbad Urbagomer, skin in front of skin, or like a limb in front of a limb. Rashi explains on the Pasuk over there, it means, imagine, for example, a person sees something that's about to hit his head, he'll instinctively put up his arm to block it. So he's willing to sacrifice his arm or the skin on his arm for the sake of protecting the skin on his face. So the same way, in other words, Eod maybe knows that he's guilty and deserves some kind of punishment from Hashem, but he thinks to himself, you know what, okay, listen, I only lost my wealth and my possessions and my children and all, fine, at least it's not that bad, at least I'm safe. So that still doesn't show that, in other words, that he's really Yorei Shamayim for Lishma, for the sake of Hashem, but it's rather he still figures there's still an ulterior motive involved over there. But Hashem, he tells the Chol Asher Le'ishyit Bad Nafshei, a person would give everything he has for his life. So Hashem, Vayomer Hashem al-Satan, Vayomer Hashem says to the Satan, fine, he himself is now under your control. You can do whatever you want to him. Achas Nafshei Shmer Vayomer, but you have to guard his life. You are not allowed to kill him. So Amr of Yitzchak Koshet Tzarech Sotan Yosef Mishal Eod. The trouble that the Sotan had to go through at this point to keep Eod alive is greater than the suffering that Eod himself went through. Mashal Adam Shoim La'Avda. Imagine a person says to his servant, Shvoras Achavis, break this barrel of wine, or Shmoras Yena, but keep the wine from leaking out. So the same way, like he has to go to the ultimate degree of harming Eod's body, but make sure that his neshama doesn't leave him. In the pasuk itself, by the way, in the pesukim over there, in the narrative, it only tells that that Eod was struck with shchin ra, with a very bad case of shchin. But later on, in Eov's various dialogues over there, he mentions other things. You have a pasuk that he says, Yishvech la'oretz mirei rothi. He says, Hashem is pouring out my bile from my gallbladder on the ground. So the Gemara in Cholin actually explains, means that literally his gallbladder was pierced, which for derech klal would make a person a treifa, he wouldn't be able to survive that. The Gemara also mentions over there, he has another expression in the pasuk, Yefalach Kiryosa, he splits open my kidneys, also a very fatal thing. So we're seeing that the Satan is harming him in his internal organs as well, but nevertheless, he can't die because Hashem won't give the Satan permission for that. So the trouble that the Satan had to go through to make sure to get to the nth degree, but not to cross the line, that we're saying was not so easy.
The shchin ra, what is that?
Shchin ra literally means bad shchin. So like shchin, like boils, pimples, rashes, whatever, all over his skin. Yeah, yeah. So that's Ma'ar Shah says. In other words, so actually Ma'ar Shah says that since the pasuk mentions only shchin ra, it means that he could only harm him on the outside. But again, later on Sukkim where Eod mentions internal injuries as well, and the Gemara in Cholin actually seems to understand that that's, it's not just metaphorical, it's literal. He was actually harmed on the inside as well, and just that, and then just again, this is all part of that the Sultan can't actually allow him to die. So the Gemara continues, Amr of Shimon Lakish, going back to what we were saying about the Satan's various jobs, who Satan, who Yetzahara, who Malachamavis. He wears many hats. Now this is the same thing as we said before, B'masnei Satana, but Rav Shimon Lakish is spelling out the actual names of the jobs and bringing Psukim to substantiate that. So who Satan dichtiv Yetzah Satan? We see over here he's described as that the Satan went out and went to injure Eod. Ha Satan, by the way, means the accuser. So that's because that's his job. His job is to accuse a person in Shemayim. Like we said before, part of his job after he convinces the person to do an Aveda is to accuse him in Shemayim. Who Yetzahara dichtiv Rak Eilav Al Tishlach Yedecha. Hashem tells the Satan in the story, however, but don't stretch out your hand against him, meaning don't kill him. So, Uchtiv Asim Rak Kol Hayom. We have the same word Rak used in connection with Yetzahara and Parshas Bereishis, only bad all day. So in both places it's referring to the same force. Ma'ar Shah points out, actually, it's not just the same words. First of all, Ma'ar Shah points out that in one place that Hashem tells him actually Achas Nafshei Shmo, not Rak. But fine, Ach and Rak are both miyutim, but the point is, when we say in the Pasuk, Rak Kol Hayom, what we actually mean is the word Rak and Ach are always meant as a miyut. So it hints at the idea, rak ra, a person should be working on being memayit, on reducing the ra that's within him, on reducing and weakening his yetzahara. And then, in turn, Hashem will reciprocate and rak elav al tishlach yadecha. Now Hashem will give this, the Malach HaMavis, less power over such a person. But instead, if a person allows himself to be convinced by the Yetzirah, then the trouble starts over there. Who Malach HaMavis dichtiv, achas nafshe shmer. Hashem tells him, however, preserve his life. Alma bekaim emilsa. So if Hashem has to tell him, preserve his life, that implies that otherwise he would have the job of taking Eir's life. So therefore we see that he is also identified with the Malach HaMavis. So Ian Yaakov points out over here, you know, on the face of it again, Meshulchus is just repeating what it said in the Braisa and just adding the actual titles and the psukim that substantiated. Ian Yaakov points out it may mean another thing as well. It's not just that there are different shlichus than we know in general. A malach can be sent on different missions and then he gets a different name each time. Here the point is this is all part of one mission and there's no hislabshus. You don't have to talk about this time he's vested as in this kind of guise and this time as this one. It's all the same thing throughout. Now we have to ask in both parts of the story, the Satan seems to be standing up a lot for Avraham Avinu and using that to criticize Eir. So why is he so into defending Avraham? Since when is that the Satan's job? We talked about previously that since there were such compliments given to Eov, then the Satan is concerned that Hashem might overlook Avraham's chosin, but that kind of itself brings about the question, fine, why does the Satan care about it so much? Amar Rav Levi, Satan upnina l'shem shamayim nisgavnu. The Satan, in our story over here, and Pnina, in the story with Chana at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, we'll talk about her in a minute, they both meant what they did, l'shem shamayim. Namely, Sutton, what's with the Sutton over here? Why is he so into defending Avraham? Okay, we talked about yesterday what Ben Yehoyada says, that the Sutton has less interest in accusing those who have already passed away anyway, so therefore he doesn't have an interest in accusing Avraham. But fine, why does he have to defend Avraham? Why does he have to say that there's nobody as great as Avraham? Exactly that. Given the chazir la'akadosh baruch hu, the konota daite boser Eir, he sees that Hashem's mind seems to be inclined after Eir. Hashem seems to be favoring Eir and saying very great compliments about him. Omar, so the Sutton thinks to himself, Duma chas v'sholem, minash yilei l'ruchmusi d'Avraham. Maybe Hashem will forget his love to Avraham. So in other words, the Sutton, after all said and done, you know, he still realizes that Avraham is the center of the world in a way that Eov is not, and therefore, that's Marshall says also l'shem shemayim means, in other words, he not just that he himself is defending Avraham and accusing Eov l'shem shemayim, he also means that he's focusing on the fact that Avraham does avodah purely l'shem shemayim, as opposed to he's arguing that Eov is not, that Eov has ulterior motives involved. There's many interesting explanations among Mephoshim, among various Mephoshim and various Sforim, what exactly this means. In other words, still, we have to ask Sforit. It seems to be out of character for the Sutton to be concerned about a thing like that. So there are a number of interesting explanations. Among them are that Faket, the fact that we're descended from Avraham and Yitzhak and Yaakov itself it means we have a standard that we're supposed to be, that we Jews are supposed to be living up to. So therefore, so the Sutton takes the view. So one explanation is the Sutton takes the view. You know what? If Hashem forgets about the greatness of Avraham and focuses on Eov, then that makes me much less able to accuse the Jewish people in the future. Because then how can I say, well, remember Avraham, if Hashem has, so to speak, forgotten about Avraham, therefore he has an interest in keeping the tzidkus of Avraham front and center in order for Keret that he can use that as an accusation against the Jewish people. Reb Yonis and Eigerschitz makes a point in one of his drashas that Eov and company, we talked about before, they all seem to be descended from Avraham Avinu. Eov himself was from Eretz Utz, where Utz is one of the relatives of Avraham, not exactly descended from Avraham, but fine, from Avraham's extended family. It's one of the sons of Nachor. Bildad, Eliphaz is from Teman, which is one of the sons of Esav. Bildad is from Shuach, which is one of the sons of Keturah, etc. So all of them seem to be from the extended family of Avraham. So all of them, there's a certain interest in keeping Avraham's schus front and center. So therefore, the Satan wants that they should continue to have an interest. He explains that the goyim, especially the goyim descended from Yishmael and Esav, have a great interest in making sure that Avraham's greatness is always kept in the foreground, so that they themselves can then benefit from it. So therefore, the Satan is thinking the same way, is thinking along the same lines, and therefore he doesn't want Avraham's schusim to be forgotten. And there are various other interesting explanations of why he's doing this. Okay. But we see, in other words, the Satan was really doing this L'shem Shemayim. What about Penina? Now, with Penina, we have the story at the beginning of Shmuel, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, where Elkanah had two wives, Chana and Penina, and Chana was childless, and Penina had lots of children. And then whenever they went to Mishkan Shiloh, then Penina would be making Chana upset, and Chana cried, and eventually then she davened, and she had the son Shmuel. And the pasuk says, "V'chiyasata tzorosa gam kas," her tzora, Penina, which was a tzara to Hannah, tzara as a co-wife, and they're called that because generally these two don't get along and they usually create tzaras for one another. So yeah, that's the standard term for it in Tanakh and in Gemara. So her tzara also made her angry, gam kas, indeed making her angry, ba'avur har ima, in order that she should complain. Meaning, in other words, Penina, why is Penina treating Chana so badly, is in order to motivate her to daven, in order to motivate her to complain to Hashem and daven for a child. One thing is, there's a medrash that says that by this point, by the time the story in Sefer Shmuel opens, Chana and Elkanah had been married for almost 20 years and they still didn't have a child. So there was the idea that maybe Chana is going to give up at some point on davening for it. So therefore, every time, in particular, when they went to Shiloh, then Penina would be bothering Chana and getting on her nerves in order that she should be motivated to daven.
Did she make fun of her or just give a little shtick?
So actually what the Medrash says is that she would tell her, for example, so now every time they went to Shiloh, they had a big family coming over there. Again, they had Penina and she had 10 children and all of that. So Penina would say things to Chana like, you know, have you made breakfast for your son yet? Or have you gotten a new coat for your daughter yet? Yeah, like to stick in a needle over there. Yeah. You know what though? Actually, it's not funny because I'll tell you. So here we're saying that Penina did L'shem Shemayim. With that said, though, when I learned this many years ago in yeshiva, in seventh grade, my Rebbe pointed out, you know, as much as that, the fact is that you're putting Penina in the same breath as the Sutton means it's not exactly a compliment to her either. But yeah. Anyway,
doesn't she lose all of?
So that's what I was going to say. Rashi brings on the psukim over there from the Medrash as follows. Now we're saying Penina had 10 children. In her Shira, Chana says, Ad Akora Yoda Shiva. She says the barren woman has given birth to 7 children. And she's referring to herself. Now, when did she have? She had as follows. She had Shmuel. Later on, the pasuk says she had 2 more boys and 2 more girls. So altogether, she has 5 children of her own. But where do the other 2 come from? So Rashi brings from the Medrash, what happened was, every time that Chana had a child, 2 of Penina's children passed away. Eventually, after 4 of her children were born, Penina realized what's going on over here. I mean, she's no simple woman either. She realized finally that this is a punishment for her. So she came begging and pleading to Chana to daven for her children that they shouldn't die. And Chana did. Those 2 children stayed alive, and they're called, therefore, they're credited to Chana because her tefillah saved them. So therefore, in effect, she had 7 children, 5 of her own, and 2 of Penina's who stayed alive because of her. Now, so why Taka does Penina deserve such a terrible punishment of saying over here she was doing the Shem Shemayim? So there are actually a number of interesting explanations among Mefoshim about it. The Al-Shech HaKadosh on the Psukim points out that Penina may have had a double motivation. Yes, there was L'shem Shemayim, as we're saying over here, to get Chana to daven, but there may have also been a bit of personal jealousy in there in the fact that Elkanah loves her so much, as we see in the Psukim, that Elkanah says to her, aren't I better for you than 10 children, than the 10 children that Penina had? So therefore, there was a little bit of something personal in there and not purely L'shem Shemayim. For tzaddikas like Penina, that can have very bad effects.
In front of people.
I don't know whether he said it, but whatever the case, Penina picked up on it, obviously. Even if it wasn't directly in front of Penina, obviously she picked up on it. Ben Yehoyada over here on our Gemara actually says even more so. He says that when we're saying over here that she meant L'Shem Shemayim, that was how she pretended in front of people she's doing L'Shem Shemayim. Really, she's doing it for selfish motives. Man lawyers on the pasuk gives yet another very interesting explanation. He says Pnina took the view that Chana is maybe not such a tzaddikus, and therefore she's getting yisurim in order to clean up her averus. So therefore she's teasing her and harassing her and whatever in order that her averus should be cleaned up. But with that, she was terribly misjudging Chana, because after all, Chana was a tzaddikus and even a neviyah, and for that, therefore, for misjudging her is why she was punished.
She
wasn't Dan Makav Skos, according to that, yeah. So the Gemara continues, this that was saying that Sutton said what he said and accused Eov and was defending Avraham, well, Shem Shemayim. So the Gemara says, Dorsha Rab Acha Bar Yaakov Papunya. One time Rab Acha Bar Yaakov gave a drosha to this effect in Papunya, in a city named Papunya. But also Sutton, the Nashke Akare, the Sutton himself came and kissed Rab Acha Bar Yaakov's feet in gratitude that Rab Acha Bar Yaakov had stuck up for him and shown and explained to everybody what his real motivation was over here. The fact that he kissed him on the feet, Ben Yehoyada makes a point, a couple of different points in it. One of them being, which I think Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz says much the same thing. We find the Gemara in Brochus that says when the fact that Tamar Chachamim, that their knees sometimes feel weak and buckle is because of Kirchas Atumah, because of Shadim, as the Gemara calls them over there, that surround the Tamar Chachamim. So representing minions of the Yetzirah, of the Sotan Yetzirah Malchamavis. So now when Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is defending the Sutton and explaining that what he was doing, the Shem Shemayim, so he deserves to be kissed on those very same knees where usually the Sutton and his followers would be attacking the Chachamim over there. So instead he kisses them in gratitude. Now, the Pasuk says, B'chol zos lechota Eov b'sfasav. With all of this, Eov did not sin with his lips. Meaning, in other words, that even though he could have been very provoked by this time to curse Hashem, and even his wife is telling him, as we learned yesterday, she says, what he's still holding on to you, tzidkos, baruch elikim b'mus. Nevertheless, the pasuk says, b'chol zos lechota Eov b'sfasav. Nevertheless, Eov did not sin with his lips. Now, that means he didn't sin with his lips. He didn't say anything wrong. But the fact that it has to say b'sfasav implies that in his heart, he was already sinning. He's already thinking wrong thoughts against Hashem. In other words, Marsha points out the first time, after the first perek, after the disasters that hit all of his possessions and his children and all, it just says, b'chol zes lechata Eov, period. Now, after perek beis, b'chol zes lechata Eov b'sfasav. So now we understand that nuance of difference means now he's still not allowing anything to pass his lips, but he's already thinking. My karma, what did he say? What's an example of something that he said later on in one of his speeches that shows that he's already thinking wrongly? He says a pasuk, Eretz nitna b'yad rosh of a gomer. The world has been given into the hand of a rosh. So what does that mean? Omer Rava, Dikish Eiv latach ka'ora alpia. Eiv wants to turn over the plate upside down. In other words, to remove, Rashi says, to uproot any vestige of covered to Hashem. At this point, he's blaspheming Hashem and saying Hashem is not running the world. Hashem is leaving it up to the Sutton to run the world. And so that's a terribly apocryphal thing to say. So therefore, it's not b'sfasav because he's not openly saying. He's saying something which he could equally well, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now. Abaye is going to say that no, what he means is that Hashem makes it look like the Sultan is in control, but of course Hashem is in control. But the fact that he used a phrasing like that has that double meaning means that the libay chote. He's already speaking in a way where it can be understood that way, showing already that his heart is not so loyal to Hashem anymore. The expression to turn over the plate is a very interesting one. Why is that being used to refer to a lack of covered to Hashem? So Ben Yehoyada brings an explanation about it, that the word ka'ora rearranged spells okar hay. He wants to uproot the hay from the world and say that the hay of Hashem's name, which is Malchus, is not in control, and then the world is being just run at random or whatever. But there's an interesting explanation on it. Brought from the Vilna Gaon, based on an interesting classic sefer called Ben HaMelech VaHaNazir. The story is that there was one time a king who, anybody did the slightest thing against his will, then the guy would immediately be sentenced to be executed. So now, one day, a waiter is serving soup to the king, and he spills a drop of it on the king. So then the same waiter goes and turns over the entire plate upside down onto the king's lap. So the king says, "How you talking? What do you think you're doing?" And the guy says, "You know, once I spilled the one drop, I realized already I'm going to be chayav misa. But I want it. But for your honor, though, if now you were to sentence me to death for that, then people would say, 'What kind of a cruel king is that? For one drop of soup, he's having a guy executed.' So therefore, I dafka did this way in order to salvage your covered. This way, at least people can say, 'You know what? Fine, the guy's a chutzpah yaki, deserves punishment.' In the same way, so in kind of to get his money worth. But in other words, the point is, according to that, then Eev is doing the same thing. Since he's suffering so much and he's thinking that people are going to think Hashem is being unfair, fine, let him say something which can be taken as open apikorsis. And now, when he gets punished, now when he's getting further punished, then everybody will say, 'You know what, there's good reason for it. He deserves everything he got.' So it's sort of salvage Hashem's honor. So Omar Abaya Gibra Eev Elakinegra Sutton. Abaya says, no, the Eev is talking about the Sutton. He doesn't mean that Hashem abandoned the world and left it in the hands of the Sutton. He means that the world looks as though the Sutton is in charge and as though Hashem is not running things. But of course he still believes that Hashem runs things. So you can't say Latach Kor Alpia that he wants to take away any vestige of honor to Hashem. Again, Maharsha says it's really both. In other words, he's saying something which has a double meaning precisely because he had in mind both the way Rava is understanding it and the way Abaya is understanding it. So the Gemara points out Ketanoi. This is actually Ketanoi. This is actually Machlokas Tanoi. How to understand that Pasuk of Eev's. He says, Eretz Nitna B'Yad Rasha, Rabbi Yezah Omer Bikish Eev Lapach Ka'ar Alpia, that Eev wants to overturn the plate and take away any bit of honor to Hashem and then actually say as though the world is not being run by Hashem at all, Chas V'Shalom. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua, but Rabbi Yeshua says, Lo'idibra Eev, Ele Kedegedo, Klapei Sutton. No, Eev is only speaking. Against it, he's only speaking. Regarding the Sutton, he's saying Hashem makes it look as though the Sutton is in charge, but really, of course, he believes fully that Hashem is in charge. In any case, this is an example. We're saying of one of these things of that Eev was not sinning v'sfasav, but only believably. Worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more psukim in Eev that the Gemara is going to analyze, but of what Eev is saying. But the Malbim at the end of the Sefer has a very, very interesting explanation. He said, at the end of the Sefer, near the end of the Sefer, the last time Eev speaks to Hashem, he says that now I understand that everything you're saying is correct. So the Malbim actually has an interesting explanation. He says, Eev is saying to Hashem, all this time when I was arguing against you and saying all these seemingly apocryphal things and so forth, I never actually believed it. I was being basically a devil's advocate. Whenever there's a debate, you have to have somebody take the negative side. So my friends are trying to argue on your behalf, so I'm arguing the opposite in order to get the matter clarified, in order to show the weaknesses in their arguments and be able to arrive at the truth. So therefore, according to that, it certainly comes out that he's not doing it with evil intentions, but fakert, he's doing it in order that the matter should be thoroughly clarified how Hashem actually, that we should be able to understand as best we can how Hashem actually runs the world, but not using weak arguments such as the friends uses, but rather to see where to probe the weaknesses in those arguments and find how we can find stronger arguments in the end.
Wow. Yeah. How long has this story taken place for? A couple of 6 months?
The Mishnah in Adia says that the total amount of time of Eev's sufferings was 12 months. So I don't know if that means that for 12 months he and his friends are dialoguing. In the Psukim, we don't really have a lot. We have Vayhi Hayom, you have the original time when the Sutton came to accuse Eev, and then when he lost all his possessions. You have the other Vayhi Hayom, after which he was struck with the boils and everything else. After that, the Pasuk says his friends came, and it says they sat quietly for 7 days not saying anything, and then the debates begin. How long they actually took, I don't know if it says one way or the other. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ola, Tzayin Shvat. So here, actually, today's piece is actually taken from the end of Rambam, which we just finished yesterday. The Rambam finishes off in Hilchos Malachim. They're saying that the occupation of the whole world in Mashiach times will only be to know Hashem. So what is this expression? Lo yeh esek kol ha'olam, the occupation of the entire world will not be elo ladas Hashem, only to know Hashem. What that means is, what do you mean? As opposed to what? And what it means is not just as opposed to mundane work. It means even as opposed to the kind of work and the kind of effort that nowadays we're chayav al pi Torah. Namely, the Rambam himself writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah that even a person who's Torah Seum Nosei has to do a little bit of work every day, enough for him to live on. So it may be a minimal amount, but he still has to do some kind of work to be able to earn some kind of parnasa, even if he's Torah Seum Nosei. So now we're saying in the future, in Yemos Mashiach, Lo Yeh Esek Kol Olam, the entire occupation of the world will be only Ladash Hashem. There won't even be needed that little amount of minimal effort to make a parnasa. Yeah. Okay, continuing with Hilchos Tzitzis and the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. Whenever you make a bracha on a mitzvah, you're supposed to say it's standing. Except for the bracha on shechting and the bracha for Afroshes Challah. Because those are not really considered such a mitzvah in the sense that if you want to eat bread, then you have to take challah from it. If you want to eat meat, you have to shecht the animal. But it's not in and of itself a mitzvah that you have an obligation to do if it weren't for that. So therefore those brachas, you can say sitting, but the other brachas, you have to say standing. So therefore the bracha on the talus has to be said standing. When it comes to doing the mitzvahs themselves, then it depends. Some of them don't need to be standing. Some of them do. Each one was explained in its appropriate place throughout Shulchan Aruch. For example, you have tefillin, birkas koyanim, kiddush, shavdala, etc. You have various ones. Some of them are required to be done standing, and some of them you can do sitting, and some of them there are different minhagim.
When you get older and a little bit weaker, everything is good.
Well, yeah, I guess there is that. Okay.
Yeah, you have to daven Shmona Esrei sitting.
I hear you. So now, when it comes to wrapping oneself in tzitzis, Chazal tell us that it does have to be done daka standing, and there's a remez to it in the Torah. Because by tzitzis it says, V'hoyo lochem l'tzitzis, V'hoyo lochem l'tzitzis. By Sfiras Oimer it says, V'sfartem lochem. Now, Sfiras Oimer has to be done standing, as the Alter Rebbe explains how we know that in turn from when we get a long time from now, or Be'ez Hashem, we'll get to the halachas of Sfiras Oimer. We'll talk about that. So there we learn that it has to be done standing because the pasuk says Bakama, which means in the standing grain, but also means you have to be standing when you're saying Sfiras Oimer. So the same way wrapping yourself in tzitzis also has to be done standing. So now, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, the bracha l'hisatif b'tzitzis implies that you have to wrap yourself in it. L'hisatif means to wrap yourself. Now, wrapping, by definition, would mean katifa sayishma elim, the way that the Arabs wrap themselves. And if it's not, then it's not called atifa, then it's called levisha, then it's just called wearing. So therefore, you would have to wrap yourself in your talus like atifa sayishma elim, and in particular, that would mean to cover your face with the edge of the talus, and to cover your entire face down to the cheekbones. Down to the indentations in the cheek below the mouth, so over here. Now then, in Sefer Menhagim from Hayom Yom, it says our minhag is not to do that, just to cover the eyes with the talus, so you don't have to go any further down than that. But Eber talks about in a letter, after all, the Yishmaelim themselves don't cover it that far down, otherwise how would they see? How would they see when they're walking? Maybe they just cover their eyes. Fine, you can look a little bit down when you're walking. But yeah, according to that way of looking at it, a talus cotton would be potter from tzitzis entirely because you don't wrap your head in it. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk about so how do we make a bracha on a talus cotton. So we'll talk more about that in the next sikh, Be'ez Hashem.